We're talking about lunch shaming on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Over the years, schools across the country have tried different ways to collect unpaid lunch money. Earlier this month, we saw a Rhode Island district abandon its plan to serve cold sandwiches to students whose families owe money. Here in Wisconsin, there is a bipartisan bill that would require schools to provide a school lunch or breakfast to a student who requests one and would stop schools from taking certain actions against students who are unable to pay. Were you ever denied a hot meal or shamed by your school for unpaid debt? What happened and how did it affect you? We're at 800-642-1234. Go ahead and join in. Republican Representative Gary Tauchin is from Bonduelle, representing parts of Brown, Wapaka, Shawnee, and Outagamie counties. He's introduced a bill that would prohibit schools from stigmatizing a student who is unable to pay for their meal or who has outstanding lunch debt, and a public hearing for this bill is set for 11 this morning at the Capitol. Representative Tauchin, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Thanks for having me.
And David Lee is here as well. He's executive director of Feeding Wisconsin. That's a statewide association of the Feeding America food banks, serving more than 750 agencies and 1,000 local food programs in our state. And he joins us from our studios in Milwaukee. David, welcome back to the program.
Good morning. So good to be here with you.
Well, Representative Tauchin, as we noted earlier, a public hearing is being held later today for the legislation you introduced. What was the genesis of you deciding to introduce this bill?
Well, there's been issues and problems around the state. This is really a national issue. It hasn't just happened in the state of Wisconsin. And there's thus far six states that have passed it: New Mexico, California, Illinois, Washington, Arizona, and Texas, and about half of the other states in the country have some sort of legislation pending. So people recognize there's a problem. In the state of Wisconsin, we have 421 different school districts, and each of them has their own policies. So I think, from my perspective, it's just very, very important that we feed children so that they can learn. And we have a free and reduced lunch program in the state of Wisconsin, but if people fall behind on their lunches, they're sometimes given, they have the trays pulled, they get a sandwich and a glass of milk, a different kind of meal. And I think it's important that we make sure that children are fed, that they're not bullied and stigmatized, and that we work together to make sure that they have the best opportunity to learn.
So when you mean getting their lunch tray pulled, it means that they're not being served a lunch?
Well, there's some places that have taken the tray away and dumped it and given the student a sandwich. So if they're fall behind $15 or $20 in payments, they're in a situation where they're behind, and some school districts have different policies. Some don't understand it as well. And so I think it's important that we standardize things and make sure that children get fed so that they can learn.
David, let's bring you in here. As you watch this issue of meal shaming across the country here in Wisconsin, what does it look like to you from your perspective? What are you thinking?
Yeah, so I think what's really interesting here is that, you know, all kids just want to fit in, right? And so at lunchtime, a highly social time for kids to interact with each other and sort of get their social and emotional learning on, to have a moment where they are singled out as being different from all the kids is incredibly damaging, right? So just a quick anecdote. At our annual conference earlier this spring, our keynote speaker, Sarah Smarsh, who is the author of Heartland, a memoir of working hard and being broke in the richest country on earth, shared an interesting anecdote about how shame sort of informed her fifth grade experience, right? She described herself as a young, confident, outgoing kid, but because her family was poor, they moved around a lot. And in one of those moves, there was a glitch in the bureaucracy between the Kansas school districts where she was growing up that made it so that she didn't qualify for the free lunch program at the new school that she actually was getting in the previous school. She was so keen to the shame of the fact that she had qualified for free lunch and her family was poor that she didn't tell anybody and didn't eat lunch for the rest of the year in fifth grade.
Oh, wow. How can hunger affect a child's ability to learn and to succeed in school?
Yeah, you know, I think Rep. Tauchin noted this earlier, but when children are hungry, they're less likely to be able to focus in classrooms and therefore less likely to learn. And, you know, they can be more disruptive, which takes focus away from teachers trying to teach other students. And overall, hunger has incredible social costs on children, and chronic hunger are barriers to them growing up healthy, which, you know, robs our state's children of their potential.
Talking with David Lee, he's executive director of Feeding Wisconsin, a statewide agency that serves local food programs, and State Representative Gary Tauchin, who recently introduced a bill that would prohibit schools from shaming students when their school lunch accounts are delinquent. Public hearing on that bill will be held later today. Do you see meal shaming as a policy issue where lawmakers should step in? How do you want to see lawmakers address it? What would you like to see in Representative Tauchin's bill that you think would make a difference? We're at 800-642-1234. You can email ideas at WPR.org. Representative, in addition to barring schools from humiliating students for not having lunch money, your bill would also require districts to only communicate with parents about their accounts, and it would prohibit schools from adding collection agency fees to their bills. Can you tell us about that component and that impact there?
Right. Well, there's actually several different practices that this bill eliminates. One is pulling trays and dumping them. Requiring manual labor, providing a meal of inferior quality, requiring a child to act as intermediary between their parents and the school, and then publicly stigmatizing or shaming the child for not being able to afford a quality meal. So there's a lot of different practices that we want to make sure that are eliminated, because it puts the child in the middle. And these are kids, and all we want to make sure that we do is give them the best opportunity. And if people are stigmatized, if they're shamed and humiliated and embarrassed, that's not a situation where they're going to be learning nearly as well as they would had that not happened. So I think those are areas that we have to try to eliminate and then work to improve whatever system we have. If we have a statewide program and standardize it and there's problems with it, we can correct it a lot easier than having 421 different policies across the state that are inconsistent. So I think there's opportunities to improve, and I've actually got a couple of amendments that I'm looking at to try to improve the bill, and I'm willing to work with anybody to see if we can't make it better. But I think it really is important that we start somewhere.
We're talking about school lunch debt and a new assembly bill that aims to prevent what's known as lunch shaming when a student is unable to pay for their meal or has outstanding debt. The bill's sponsor, Representative Gary Tauchin, stays with us. David Lee is here. He is the head of Feeding Wisconsin. Your thoughts on meal shaming as we see this issue escalate all over the country? We're at 800-642-1234. Educators and administrators, how does this issue impact the students in your school? What kind of solution would resolve it? Where do you see gaps in the way current school policies address the issue of delinquent lunch accounts? And did your district find an innovative solution? Call in. You can also tweet us at WPR Mornings. We'll get back to this in just a minute here in the Ideas Network. We're talking about student lunch debt and what's referred to as meal shaming. It's the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Thanks for being here. More than three quarters of school districts reported having unpaid student meal debt at the end of the 2016-2017 school year. And that's according to a report last year by the School Nutrition Association. And there's this new assembly bill in Wisconsin aiming to stop districts from calling out or stigmatizing students who have unpaid meal debt, among other things. Getting your thoughts on this at 800-642-1234. Are you a parent, or do you know a parent, perhaps, whose child was called out in some way for meal debt? What do you wish the school had done instead? Call in, tweet us, WPR Mornings, and Representative Gary Tauchin stays with us, and David Lee is here as well, Executive Director of Feeding Wisconsin. Let's go to the phones now with Barry joining us from Spooner. Good morning, Barry.
Good morning. For the discussion, I've heard about the side of the bill that discusses the shaming of the children or the, you know, making sure that they get a lunch. But what about the other half of the problem, and what recourse will the bill actually provide to the districts to collect the debt that'll continue to grow if it's not enforced in any other way?
Hey, Representative Tauchin, your bill doesn't include funding for districts to enact the changes this is proposing.
So what we've done with it is allowed donations, gifts, and bequests to be able to use to cover the cost of student lunch debt. I also have an amendment that will be the actually 10th tax checkoff to be able to address. People will be able to donate whatever they choose. We don't have like $1, $2, or $3, but whatever they would choose to donate on their tax form for student lunch debt. So I don't know that I have all the answers, but there's been people around the state who have chipped in. They've recognized the problem in their local community, and one of the schools in Cudahy is going to be testifying today, and they've been able to cover the cost of student debt. So if administrators, nutritionists, and others have ideas, I'm willing to work with anybody to improve the bill, but I think it's important to start somewhere. And if you don't have a discussion and a debate and come up with compromises, you have nothing. So I think it is important to move forward.
Do you think donations from people, corporate donations as well, is that a long-term solution here?
Well, that's what I think in certain instances it's going to be very valuable. I think that the tax, having a checkoff on the tax form should be viable. But I do think that it really is important to make sure children are fed and not humiliated, embarrassed, and give them the best opportunity to learn and grow. So, there is no perfect bill. All we can do is the best we can do, and I'm hoping that we can work together to make this the best bill possible, but give children their best opportunity to grow.
Let's go to Bob now, joining us from River Falls. Hi, Bob.
Hi. I get angry now that I'm starting to listen to this. I was in elementary school in the early 1960s. This kind of thing was going on then. And it's just as absurd then. It was just as absurd then as it is now. These kids get marginalized. They get picked on by the other kids. I can remember like it was yesterday, feeling terrible for these other kids that were kept in separate categories, and they had to sit at a different table, and they weren't given seconds if there were available. They had extra food. It's preposterous in a country with so much food and wealth that a simple thing like this of making sure kids have something to eat in school without being victimized and bullied by the system is totally preposterous.
Bob.
And I think, and I just think that this is a pretty simple fix. I think, you know, and the idea that somebody even has to propose a bill to address this, it's just insane.
Bob, thanks for the call. I want to give this to David Lee. What do you see about the legacy of this problem?
Yeah, so I think Bob's comment is right on, right? I mean, the shame that some kids may experience due to this will last with them a lifetime. I think Bob's story is a testament to that. I think Sarah's story is a testament to that. But if I can just like loop back, and I think this will make sense. To the previous question, I think it's great to encourage the communities to step up to donate, and our network of food banks and food pantries depend on the generosity of our friends and neighbors every day. Overall, this is a good thing, right? However, at the same time, I don't know that that fixes the core problem, which is that families who may not qualify for the free lunch program and who are in the reduced price lunch program and who are, you know, also paying full freight for lunch at schools are balancing so many expenses that sometimes their children's lunch accounts go delinquent. Right, that there are so many families living in our state and who are working, but just not making enough money to get by or get ahead. And I think we can figure out ways. I think Bob is right. I think we can figure out ways to ensure that schools have all the food they need, all the funding they need to ensure that they can provide all the children having the essential nutrition they need to learn, grow, to learn and grow into healthy adults.
Let's bring in Sandy from De Pere to the conversation. Sandy, hi.
Hi. Yeah, I just want to say in De Pere, they go on, I don't know if other school districts do this, but they have white lunch bags so that if a kid, you know, doesn't has to or can't afford to pay for their lunch, they bring out the white lunch bag. It's a stigma. Everybody knows what it means. And half the times the kids wouldn't even accept it because they couldn't walk into that lunchroom with that white bag. So when I was substituting, I would always have a pack of brown bags that I would switch out the lunch. Mm. And then just tell the child that, oh, your mom dropped off your lunch.
So, Sandy, this is going on now.
Yes.
Representative, white lunch bags.
Well, you know, as policymakers, we don't know what each child's household situation is. And there may be health problems in the family. There might be financial problems. Could be drug and alcohol abuse or, you know, other issues that the family's dealing with. And, you know, before we can fill a child's mind with knowledge, we have to make sure they have a full stomach. So we just can't know everything, and we have to take that into consideration and make sure that we do all we can to help the child grow and be successful in the future. And this is one of those areas that we absolutely want these kids to feel good about themselves, and we don't want them bullied. I want them to learn. And we live in, and David mentioned it before, but we live in the Midwest, in America's breadbasket, and there is absolutely no excuse for hunger in children in their schools.
Let's go to Pat now, joining us from Chippewa County. Hi, Pat.
Hello, and good morning.
Good morning.
I appreciate the bill's author and people that are working hard to get at the root causes and to help kids, because you're right. Without healthy breakfast and lunch, it is harder to learn. I do want to say, though, that, you know, part of the root cause might be that bigger picture of if we accepted the Medicaid expansion money, that can help some of our families have more income, you know, to help in some areas. There would be a small number. But I think the other important thing to remember is we are also teaching responsibility, not through white lunch bags or stigma. That's not the way to do it. But helping kids understand that we do have to work together so that they can help themselves. With that, I know many staff who, like the previous caller, they work hard to make sure that the kids that are not able to get lunch and don't bring the lunch from home, that's another option that many families use, but that they do have a few extra things on their own cost. Grown-up put things into lunch bags for kids. So Pat, just wanted to share that comment.
Yeah, Pat, thanks so much for the call. And Representative, it sounds like Pat's saying this is going to take a village to solve this. Isn't a community approach here?
Well, I think she's absolutely correct. It really is important that we recognize that, you know, almost nobody is successful by themselves. They've got great mentors. They've got people that help them along the way, every step of the way. And I feel like all kids need that. And some kids don't have that because they've got a bad situation at home. There might be abuse or they might have financial problems, health problems, and those kind of things. And that really, there just is only so much money. And although we have a free and reduced lunch program, things happen that there just isn't money available. So I think we need to make sure that we get started on this problem. We know we're not going to be perfect, but I don't want perfect to be the enemy of good. So,
and David, I just want you to have the last few seconds here, your closing thoughts here on lunch shaming.
Yeah, I think the bill is a great start. I'm really looking forward to the hearing later today and excited for the possibility that this can move forward. I should also note that with summer approaching, the summer months really increase the risk of child hunger because the kids no longer have access to the school meal program, the school lunch program while summer is happening. So this is why the federally funded summer meal program is so important, and it will be kicking off in our state around June 10th, and families interested in participating should call 211 or text FOOD, that's F-O-O-D, to 877-877.
And we'll leave it there. Gary Tauchin, representative from Bondiwell. David Lee, executive director of Feeding Wisconsin. You're listening to the Ideas Network. We're talking about the actions taken by the legislature's Joint Finance Committee this week. It is the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Thanks for being here. The Budget Writing Committee took up the UW System's 2019 to 2021 budget. They voted to hire new assistant district attorneys and give raises to prosecutors and other criminal justice officials all over the state. They opted to add two research scientists to the DNR. So we will start with the UW system budget. We'll get into all of these other actions with your reaction along the way at 800-642-1234. What do you think about extending the UW tuition freeze? Are you a UW system student? Perhaps you work within the system. What is your take on the budget? Call in. You can also email ideas at WPR.org. Laurel White is Wisconsin Public Radio State Capitol reporter, and she's co-host of the WPR Politics podcast. Laurel, welcome back.
Thanks for having me, Kate.
So starting with the system budget, and in full disclosure, Wisconsin Public Radio is part of the UW system. The tuition freeze stays for the next two academic years, but UW system president Ray Cross was really upset after Tuesday night's vote. What happened as the State Budget Committee approved a $58 million increase to the budget?
So you say that $58 million increase, and you would think that Ray Cross would be pleased, right? Well, to put that in a little bit of context, the UW system had actually asked for about a $108 million increase in the next budget. They said they wanted that money to do a variety of program expansions, particularly for things like engineering and nursing. They say they're at capacity for those programs at a lot of schools across the state. So this increase would have allowed them to hire more faculty, to increase, you know, physical facilities, things like that, to help accommodate that demand. What he said after the Budget Committee took its vote to go ahead and go forward with the $58 million instead of the $108 was that it felt like he'd been hit in the shins. He felt like it kind of came out of nowhere. He'd talked with lawmakers about this for several months now. I mean, this budget process really does kind of roll for quite a while. They submitted their request way back in August of last year, and he said that the message that he received then was that it was very reasonable in terms of a request for funding. He got a lot of positive feedback on that. And then now to come to the actual vote and have it rolled back so substantially, he said, you know, it's shocking, it's disappointing, and it's going to have a major effect on the system being able to do a lot of the things that it wanted to do over the next couple of years.
Do we know at all how the committee arrived at that number?
So basically what the committee said, and I think it's interesting to note here that $45 million of that $58 isn't automatically released. The committee actually put in another layer of approval for that $45 million. They said that they're going to treat it like a block grant. And they want the UW system to come back and say, okay, this $45 million that you sort of earmarked for us, this is how we're going to spend it. These are the things we're going to use it for. And then the committee would then approve that $45 million separately. Hmm. So that's kind of an interesting nuance to this conversation. So the committee decided that they wanted to do that because they believed it provided flexibility. So they sort of earmarked that amount. The other $13 million was more, you know, already earmarked, already ready to go. But they essentially said that they believe the UW system can function with that $45 million and the other 13, the 58, that it doesn't really need the full request. And they pointed out that the UW system actually got a pretty sizable increase during the last budget cycle, about $100 million. So essentially, they're just asking the system to operate within the means that, they believe are possible.
So this budget increase would not keep up with inflation. Is that right?
That's what Ray Cross said pretty quickly after the vote. So what happened here is the budget committee's meeting in one room of the Capitol. They hold the vote. Ray Cross is there in the audience along with a number of other chancellors from the UW system. They had notified reporters they were going to talk with reporters after the vote was taken. They get up, leave the room, go. All the reporters follow. We get into this separate room, and really one of the first things that he says, and he admitted to feeling sort of agitated, this doesn't even give us inflation. This doesn't even mean inflation. So I think that was kind of one of the first ways that he articulated his opinion of the inadequacy of this funding.
He didn't see it coming.
No, he really didn't see it coming. He said that sort of the first inkling was last Thursday, that he heard that things might not be going exactly as he wanted them to. But prior to that, since August, as I said, he'd been told that it was a reasonable request, and he seemed like it was going well.
Have we heard from the governor? Because the governor had proposed a $130 million increase?
That's right. So the governor actually went above and beyond what the system requested. He proposed $130 million. It's becoming a little bit of a familiar line from Governor Evers at this point, sort of saying, as he has about other things like the Medicaid expansion or K-12 education funding, that he's disappointed in what lawmakers have approved in the budget committee, that he says the process isn't over. He's calling on citizens to contact their lawmakers and tell them that they believe what they've approved isn't sufficient, because this process really technically isn't over. So what happens now is that now that the budget committee has approved an amount of money, it goes to the full bodies of the Assembly and the Senate. Both of those bodies have to pass the amounts. Then that goes to, of course, the governor as a bill to sign. So there are these different layers of approval that have to happen. And sort of the big thing that's looming over all of this, as the governor says he's not happy calling on people to contact their lawmakers, is he going to veto this budget when it eventually gets to his desk? What is that veto going to look like? And how are lawmakers going to respond to it?
Lots of questions there. Talking with Laurel White, she's Wisconsin Public Radio's state capitol reporter. We're talking about Joint Finance Committee's votes earlier this week. You can join in at 800-642-1234. What's your take on the budget? What interest do you have in Wisconsin public colleges? Are you a lawmaker or perhaps a lobbyist? What do you think about the state of funding allocation for the UW system? You can call in, email ideas@WPR.org. Let's go to Dick joining us from Brookline. Hi, Dick.
Good morning. I'd just like to say, and in fairness, I'm a faculty member at UW-Madison, but the UW-Madison is a jewel in the state of Wisconsin. It's been a driver for economic development. It's an outstanding institution, but the quality of that institution is being diminished by the cuts in state funding. We're falling well behind our peer institutions in terms of the investment in the of the state. And if you look at that, the trend is not good long term for the UW-Madison if this continues. And that's my comment. Thank you.
Dick, thanks for the call. And the Legislative Fiscal Bureau has looked into funding over the years. What do we know from that?
So we do know that funding has certainly taken a hit at the UW system in recent years. There was that rather large cut made under former Governor Walker. What Dick said was actually articulated by a number of members of the committee earlier this week, particularly Democratic members of the committee. A big part of this UW system funding conversation is, of course, the tuition freeze that you mentioned. And that tuition freeze has been in place since 2013. And a big part of that conversation has been what Democratic lawmakers and now Governor Evers have called funding the freeze. And they say that needs to be done to sort of compensate for that lack in tuition growth, right? Mm-hmm. So in this particular budget, the governor allocated about $50 million to do that. Republican lawmakers did not approve that amount of money to, you know, quote unquote, fund the freeze. And as part of the conversation, Democratic lawmakers said, you know, if we're not giving the system more money and we're not funding the freeze, we're not paying for things like salaries for faculty. And that really does pose a challenge for not only retaining current faculty. A lot of people have pointed out that faculty have been sort of poached by other universities, other institutions, but attracting new faculty to the UW system. What sort of message does it send that state resources aren't going in there in the way that the system is requesting and things like that? So that's certainly a big part of the conversation that Dick articulated there.
But Governor Evers did want to extend the tuition freeze for another 2 years. Is that right?
He absolutely did. So there's a sort of point of agreement between Democratic and Republican lawmakers. We see these occasionally. We've seen them in the income tax cut for the middle class. The difference is how they want to get there. So everyone agrees that they want to keep tuition affordable for students in Wisconsin, but Democratic lawmakers believe the state kind of needs to step up and fill that gap. Republican lawmakers believe the system has been very successful in kind of making it work through the cuts in recent years.
Let's go to Steve now in Madison. Hi, Steve.
Yeah, Lori, we'd appreciate it if you'd name some names. Who are the prime GOP, presumably, legislators who are working against this cutback? And do you want to speculate on their motives for working against the cutback in the UW funding?
Steve, thanks for the call. You did talk with lawmakers, and we have a clip of that. Let's hear it.
You cannot continue to freeze tuition without putting resources behind the freeze.
Once again, we're presenting something that doesn't spend more, because I don't think we need to.
So that was a Democratic Representative Evan Goyke, and we had the Republican representative there. Was that Shannon Zimmerman?
Yes, that's right.
Of River Falls. So you're definitely seeing a party line split?
Oh, absolutely. This was a 12-4 vote of the Joint Finance Committee. If you're looking for names, you can certainly go and look at the 12 Republican members of the Joint Finance Committee. They voted as a party unanimously to support this level of funding for the UW system. And a number of them mentioned during this debate that they're graduates of the UW system. They believe in the UW system. And they certainly don't see this as undermining it. They sort of see it as making sure the system is accountable to taxpayers, that it's being transparent and responsible. So it's certainly a partisan issue in terms of the Joint Finance Committee and how this is moving forward. There's a clear split, but everybody believes they're doing what's best for the system.
Laurel White is our guide. She's WPR's politics reporter. Staying on the UW system budget with your reaction, 800-642-1234. Do you agree with the Joint Finance Committee's decision on the UW system's budget, or do you want more funding for the system? How do you draw the line, and what piques your interest about how funding is designed for the UW? Call in, tweet us, WPR Mornings. We'll get back to this in a minute on the Ideas Network. We're going over the actions taken by the Joint Finance Committee earlier this week. You're getting up to speed on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent, talking about the UW system biennium budget right now. We'll be getting into the public defender pay and the DNR scientists in just a bit. Are you a public defender here in Wisconsin? What are your thoughts on the recent wage increases, and how much would you benefit from the change? Do you live in Wisconsin where more prosecutors are needed? On the topic of DNR, do you work with the Wisconsin DNR? What do you think about adding two new scientists? We're at 800-642-1234. WPR's State Capitol reporter Laurel White is our guide to the Joint Finance Committee and those votes on Tuesday night. Let's go back to the phones now with Mike joining us from La Crosse. Hi, Mike.
Hey, thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I'm a little confused because give you the perspective of what's in my backyard. At UWL, we've built three new buildings in the past year. We've got a new track. UW-Eau Claire has a new student union. I've heard that we have a $900 million surplus in the UW system, and I feel like I'm, as a taxpayer, being guilted that we're not spending enough on education when I see lots of money being spent on education just in buildings and other things. So help me understand the differences between the surplus, the amount of building we're seeing, but yet a shortage and not keeping up with what the UW system is asking for with regards to an operational budget, or is it just that it's separate from operational and foundational building kinds of infrastructure?
Mm. Yeah, pulling that budget apart. We know the operating budget is about $6.3 billion. Mm-hmm. And then there is the state resources that is just one piece of that budget. I think it's about $1.1 billion.
That's right. So there are all sorts of different streams of funding that come in to help support the UW system. I think it is important to note, and you kind of touched on that a little bit, Mike, that there are different ways to fund particularly the physical plant projects. So there is the state capital budget. We know that there's been some conflict between the governor and Republican lawmakers about that as well.
And when you say state capital budget, you mean
capital building projects, not the capital building itself.
Yep. Carry on.
So, yes, that's a part of the budget that looks at building new facilities at campuses across the state and, you know, how the state is involved with that. And that's completely separate from the debate that they had earlier this week about funding for programs within those buildings, you know, paying for faculty and things like that, new initiatives, et cetera.
It sounds like, too, Mike, you're wondering how much state support should be there. And when you have, an operating budget, $6.3 billion, what percentage of the pie should come from state resources versus all of the other pools of money? And that seems to be what's being debated by lawmakers.
Mm-hmm, absolutely. And I know that the surplus within the system itself is something that lawmakers have paid a close bit of attention to in previous years. That was a big part of the debate when there was the sizable cut to the UW system several years ago. So I think these are all pieces of a very complicated puzzle that a lot of people have strong opinions about. Mm-hmm. And we're just in the process of kind of battling it out and seeing where they fall.
So let's move on to public defenders. The Joint Finance Committee voted to increase pay for public defenders. What do we know about this change?
So this is a change that's been a long time coming. Public defenders in Wisconsin have been pushing for raises for a very long time. The rate for public defenders in the state is about $40 an hour, which is the lowest in the nation. After the vote earlier this week, that would be moved up to $70 an hour. This is an issue that's really sort of risen up and come to prominence in a variety of ways. There's been a federal lawsuit saying that this low pay rate has actually deprived plaintiffs across the state of speedy trial and legal representation because the state is having a hard time getting private lawyers to take public defender cases when they're only paying $40 an hour. A number of people, this was mentioned during testimony, say that that amount, while it might sound pretty good to a lot of us, doesn't actually cover the expenses for these individuals to take these cases, their administrative work, things like that.
Driving to the courts,
right,
or to a different part of the state where your client is.
Exactly. This is particularly a problem in rural parts of the state. So we've seen that come up. Actually, there was an appeal to the state Supreme Court in recent years asking the Supreme Court to step in and raise this salary rate, kind of a similar argument in that it violated the state constitution by not paying these individuals more. So lawmakers were united, really, and enthusiastic about being able to do this. They said that one Republican lawmaker in particular, Representative Amy Loudenbeck from Clinton, said that this move is trying to make up for something they haven't been able to do for a long, long time. And it's kind of a welcome change to be able to push this forward. So as I mentioned before, this is just one step in the process. This might not survive the full assembly or full Senate, but it's certainly a very good sign that the Joint Finance Committee has approved it for these individuals that have been pushing for this raise.
And in the area of criminal justice, there are also an addition of assistant DAs, assistant mm-hmm. district attorneys.
Right. There's an addition in terms of the number of ADAs across Wisconsin, and they are getting a pay bump as well. Also, assistant attorneys general are getting a pay bump. So kind of a criminal justice facelift, I guess you could say.
On the topic of the DNR, the Department of Natural Resources, the Budget Committee agreed to hire two more scientists at the DNR to conduct research. It was short, though, of the five scientists that Governor Evers had wanted. What do we know there?
So the governor has said and said throughout his campaign that he wanted to return science to the State Department of Natural Resources, kind of a knock on former Governor Walker for making some changes there that Democrats haven't been pleased with in terms of science around climate change and other initiatives, believing that he didn't put enough resources into the department. So this was a pretty big deal for Governor Evers to say we're going to have these five new scientists. They're going to be organized in a specific department. Their leader is going to be the specific designated science advisor for the governor. And he also, you know, aside from that, invested quite a bit of money in a number of programs related to clean water. He put plans to borrow up to about $70 million to fund these water quality initiatives. He's called 2019 the year of clean drinking water in Wisconsin. What we saw from Republican lawmakers this week on the Budget Committee is that they agreed with a number of these initiatives, like those scientists, but only to a point. So instead of the five scientists that Governor Evers asked for, they approved two. They did not approve the creation of that new department that those five scientists were going to live in, sort of that structure that the governor had proposed. They approved some of the clean water initiatives, but generally they weren't funded to the level that Governor Evers asked for. So, for example, there was a well program that the governor wanted to fund with $2 million to allow people to replace contaminated wells. We know this is a big problem in Wisconsin. Mm-hmm. Instead of the $2 million that Governor Evers called for, GOP lawmakers authorized about $400,000.
Well, it's funny you're here because we usually have you in the State Capitol Report on Mondays. But, you know, what are you covering next in this budget debate that we find ourselves in?
Mm-hmm. So we still have a big looming chunk of the budget coming up, the transportation budget. That's huge. That's really what delayed the last
state budget. Oh, is that the elephant in the room?
I would say so. There are more elephants in the room, I think, this budget than there were in the last budget. I would say the Medicaid expansion is rivaling the transportation budget this time around, but it's certainly a huge thing, and it hasn't come up yet in committee. So we're waiting for that. We know the Budget Committee is going to meet. They tend to meet on Tuesdays and Thursdays. So we know they're coming back next week and the following week. So we have definitely our eyes on the transportation budget and seeing how that plays out. And just keeping an eye on, you know, these other things that Governor Evers has said the fight's not over yet. You know, he's mm-hmm. talked about continuing to push for the Medicaid expansion. He's talked about continuing to push for more K-12 education funding. Last week, the committee approved about $500 million for K-12, and he had asked for north of $1 billion. So it's going to be an interesting process going forward, certainly. We have divided government in Wisconsin. We haven't had that for several years, and that's shaken up this budget process a bit.
Well, thank you so much for watching it and covering it for us.
My pleasure.
Laurel White is WPR's State Capitol reporter. Just ahead, a 2019 Pew Research Center poll says 61% of Americans support gay marriage, while 31% oppose it. A sociologist explains how gay marriage has transformed American culture. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. It's The Morning Show. You're listening to the Ideas Network.